Hello, everyone, and welcome back to HOA, It's a True Story. I'm your host, Reagan Brown, and my guest today is attorney Erica Brines, partner at The Rock Law Firm in the Bay Area. As counsel, she has a front and center viewpoint of all things going wrong in today's HOA communities. I'm sure that list can be pretty daunting some days. But thank you, Erica, for joining us today, and welcome to HOA, It's a True Story.
Thank you so much for having me, Reagan. And I just want to say up front, there's so much going right.
Yay. We need to hear that too. And I swear, sometimes it does feel like we just focus on what is not going right. You know, the media itself tends to do that. But before we get started on that, tell us a little bit about yourself and your law firm and how you actually got into the whole HOA world.
Well, I don't think any of us get into the HOA world on purpose. I'm from Rhode Island, and I went to college in New York, Ithaca College, shout out to them, and law school in Rhode Island at Roger Williams Law School. And then I moved over to New York, and I was practicing there in real estate for a few years before I decided to come out here to San Francisco. And when I got out here, I realized that real estate lawyers, which is what I was, were really not doing the same job out here that they were on the East Coast because the title companies had taken over a lot of the real estate work. And so I quickly shifted gears and I started working for Fidelity National Title back in the day and Chicago Title. And in between, I shifted over to First American Title. But by happenstance, I one time took a job with Steve Weil at Birding and Weil. Steve, gosh, he really loved that I had title experience. Steve and Sandy Bonato were my mentors at that point. And quickly I ran screaming from the industry. It's a true story. And I went back to First American Title, and a few years went by and the whole market fell apart, as you might recall, 2007 or so. And that was when I made my way to Hughes Gill, now Cochran and Tinetti. And I made a home there, and I really, really enjoyed it there for a number of years. And that is where I really cut my teeth as an HOA lawyer. And to this day, I'm still very tight with them. And to this day now, I am partners with Jan Kopczynski at The Rock Law Firm. And Jan, I knew because he also came from Birding and Weil back in the day. So it's funny how this industry is so small. And that whole group of folks who are our mentors also came from a similar group back in the day who nobody at all will remember anymore. So I will stop. But anyway, it's been quite a path to get here now. And my partner Jan and I are general counsel and litigation attorneys in the HOA industry. I am general counsel and have been doing it since 2000. I'll just say six. We'll call it that at this point. And Jan around the same time, and he is a litigator. He does construction defect litigation mostly, although he's been known to dabble in landlord-tenant type issues and all sorts of interesting things that are sort of tangentially related to HOAs. But our primary focus is HOAs and everything that has to do with them.
That's fantastic. Well, I know there is a lot going right with HOAs. They're growing. It's a thriving industry. But today, what I want to talk about is some of the challenges that's happening with the HOAs. It used to be for years when we talked about what was going on with them, we talked about people, parking, and pets. But to me, compared to what some of the challenges are now, those feel more like complaints, and they're not really the true trouble spots that are facing the challenges for HOAs now. What do you think are the real challenges for HOAs today?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. At the same time as it not being people, pets, and parking, in a way it is. It's people. It's always people.
It's always people.
It's always people. So much is going right, and yet so much is going wrong with the same people. My top complaint these days is probably absentee landlords and everything that goes along with it. Absentee landlords, tenants who don't understand that they're dealing with an absentee landlord, and then the entire way that we have of dealing with all of the issues that go along with being what I would think of as an apartment manager, as opposed to being HOA management and administration.
Do you think a lot of that's driven because of the housing shortage in California? So there's more tenants in some of the HOAs than before?
Yeah, I feel like the push was originally, and to call back to Steve Weil, actually, I remember him telling me how great HOAs were going to be for people, the great equalizer, because everybody could get in on this cost efficiency, right? And so we could all own a piece of the American dream. But that's not really how it ended up sort of evolving. It's evolved into everybody can now own a condo and rent it out. And to be honest, I don't actually have any problem with tenants at all. I'm glad to have them. And I know a lot of great tenants who treat their properties really well. The issue is that what happens is that these property managers who are all trying their very hardest to deal with the primary issues at HOAs, which are really maintaining the property and making sure that the budgets are being handled and making sure that the voting is happening and the actual administrative tasks, their time is getting taken up by essentially managing apartments. If you've got a tenant, well, you're the owner of the property and you need to be talking with your tenant about whatever issues they may have. But instead, what happens is that the tenants call management. And management wants to be nice, and that's great, and they want to be part of the solution, and that's great too, but it takes up time. And most of us have portfolio managers, and that means that each one of them are managing 10, 13, 15, or maybe 5 big properties. And if you break that down by how much time they have in a day to be dealing with things, what they really don't have is any extra time whatsoever. So
that's true. The piece of pie that they take care of now, you know, has gotten divided into more and more and more and more and more. And everybody that's in that one little sliver of pie tends to think theirs is the most important that the manager should be paying attention to, when in fact, that whole pie is very important.
Right. And what we really want them to focus on is maintaining the property. That's the primary goal of the association. So that could mean greenbelt landscaping. That could mean the roof. That could mean the streets within the property. And in the meantime, they've been given this sort of quasi-governmental power to have to maintain these properties, and then also been given this structure of voting laws to choose a leader from amongst their group, where often nobody even wants to be on the board. And then they're struggling with this very, very difficult problem of being able to assess enough to fund the reserve account and the operating accounts to pay the bills. And in the meantime, to circle back to the landlords, then at the same time, they've got the phone ringing because somebody other is upset about whatever issue it is that really is the issue for their landlord, the owner of that particular lot or unit. So it's distracting for the managers. And at the same time, what we've really got to deal with is this, you know, as you know, I think, underfunding at so many associations where the primary goal needs to be maintaining the property and figuring out how to get the cash from all the owners to fund that issue.
Okay, so I think that, in my opinion, I'm going to say what I think the top three issues are: insurance, the recent laws, and reserve funding. What do you think the top three problems are that are facing HOAs now?
I would definitely agree that insurance is huge. Underfunding, I would say, is definitely true at a lot of places, not all of them, but that's being driven into the forefront by insurance, which I've seen triple, quadruple, crazy amounts. And then maybe deferred maintenance is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. That's also, I think, a big part of the same issue, the insurance issue. So to tell you a quick story about one of the associations that I work with, 400 lots, it's a planned development. And they're 3-4 unit places that are next to each other, 3-4 lot places that are next to each other with what might look like a townhouse style, but they each own a lot, but there's blanket insurance at the place, and they all have old electrical panels, but the electrical panels are owner responsibility. Well, there are 1 or 2 fires at the place over the last couple of years, and it's 400 homes. So you could imagine from time to time, there's a fire. And it actually had nothing to do with electrical, but that is on the insurance folks' hit list. So as soon as there's a fire, they come looking to see what's going on with your electrical panels. So this great place that I had that was paying something like $250,000 a year in insurance got a phone call one day from the insurance folks who said, "We're dropping you. You've had too many fires and you have a whole lot of these old electrical panels. And until you get them replaced, you're not going to get insurance on the open market anymore. You can go check out surplus insurance. That's what you're stuck with. And the board of directors said to me, but we don't maintain the electrical panels. We don't even have, how are we even going to get these people to replace their electrical panels? And I said, well, that's going to be a big issue for you. We're going to have to talk about that at length and have a plan about that. But in the meantime, their insurance went from $250,000 to $1 million.
Oh, wow. That's shocking.
A place that did not have underfunding issues suddenly had to borrow $750,000 of money from their reserve account.
Well, being a contractor-based company, you know, obviously deferred maintenance has always been a big topic of ours, and we've talked about it for years and years. But I do think one of the things that the HOA world hasn't addressed enough, other than I have heard Birding and Wild talk about this, is some of these properties are aging out. They're actually hitting their life expectancy. So their plumbing and their electrical and their city connections and sewer laterals and all these things are beginning to fail just by the simple age of the property. And there may be a time when we have to start talking about changing that whole, what that looks like. They may have to take some of those buildings down and rebuild and sell off the land and do something different with it. It's definitely a problem to see that deferred maintenance. And then with deferred maintenance falls the balcony inspection law, right? Because people put off taking care of some of these things. Now we're out there doing these inspections and they may look perfect. And of course they're not. And now you have a huge piece of the pie, going back to our pie slice, that's got to be committed or raise money to now address these balconies that are failing and other litigating type areas of the building.
Well, that's right. And the builders are doing their very best, developers, to make all of these components owner responsibility from the very beginning, right? That's become very, very common that associations themselves have limited responsibilities. And that's because, number one, the developer doesn't want to saddle the association with certain responsibilities. And that might include, for instance, balconies. I have lots of buildings that are owner, that it's an owner responsibility. It's not an association responsibility to maintain their balconies. And these owners don't have any idea what you're talking about, SB 326. They haven't got a clue. And then at the same time, if you'll permit my cynicism, the primary reason for doing that is so that when the association is new, the association has a hard time suing the developer for those items up front for construction defect because they're owner responsibility. They're not association responsibility. So like I was saying, the electrical panels, and similar to what you were saying, those are just aging out. Well, but they're not association responsibility. That's not something we've reserved for.
Are you getting requests to rewrite the CCNRs and the bylaws and that to kind of change those responsibilities? Or is that?
I get that request all the time. But the fact is that that's a big shift. And oftentimes the documents themselves say that the lenders would have to vote on that. I mean, it matters. And it would add a huge chunk of change to your reserve study every year if we're going to add in new components. I've had over the years very smart associations decide to take on responsibility for balconies, which I think has been very controversial over the years. But the fact is, it's really not a game. You know, I mean, especially when you consider that even associations have issues with deferred maintenance. When you take something like a balcony, a significant structural component, and assign its maintenance to whoever the owner happens to be, and now the owner, let's just circle back and say maybe the owner happens to be an absentee landlord. What are they, you know, they probably even think that the association has responsibility for the balconies. Mm-hmm. So it's not unlikely that nobody's thinking about a lot of these items.
That's true, yeah.
And so it's very tricky. And the underfunding is not even apparent because the right party doesn't even know it's their responsibility.
So do you think then that the current laws are staying up to what the real issues are today, or are they substantially behind? I feel like they're trying to keep it in pace with the change, but I often feel like they maybe go down rabbit holes that aren't as critical as others.
It's very difficult, right? Because the folks who are writing the laws are not the ones who are day-to-day involved in this. Yeah. I mean, there's so many associations, and as we both know, The managers are not getting paid what they need to get paid. There's not enough of them. They're doing their very best, but they're doing job. They're often being asked to act as pseudo construction managers.
That's right.
As pseudo lawyers, the expectation from boards is that the manager is going to be an expert in the field.
At their disposal at any given moment, right? That the manager should be responding to any call, request, email within minutes.
Right. With no real thought being given to the fact that the manager has limited time for your association in the first place. And then talking about that pie again, break down how much time they even have for people, pets, and parking, because they've got to get on that budget and they've got to get on the construction issues that are going on and they've got to get on, you know, the insurance issues and all different things, you know. And
I feel for them when they're trying to get their budgets passed because, you know, they work so hard to get them out. And then at the same time, they can get shot down. And it's like, I'm trying to help you guys. This is what you have to deal with. And yeah. So, well, let's talk for a minute about the new ADU law. We just spoke on this last week on a podcast, and it sounds to me like there's a lot of problems now coming out of that legislation where they're splitting lots and now it's creating this extension to the HOA that, going back to your comment about the tenants, absentee landlords, now you're adding in a whole nother segment into this HOA that wasn't initially part of it.
I didn't realize how political this conversation was, the ADU issue. I hate to sound naive about that, but I've given some thought to this. And yeah, I mean, the old way of thinking about it is that this would be an overburdening of that owner's, let's say, 1/50th right to use the common area, right? Mm-hmm. I think that there's a different way of thinking about this, and it's a very political issue. I'm loath to get into it too deep, only because I think there's a lot of folks who think that, you know, you don't get to tell your neighbor, neighbor you can't split your lot up.
Sure. If the
city says yes, the city says yes. And for sure, there is a lack of housing. I'm not positive that
they'll work it out. They'll iron out all the wrinkles. But, you know, right on the heels of that is the new voting rules. So then does that person in the ADU get the same voting rights as the...
Let's say they work this out. Let's say the answer is no. And this is why I'm a little bit not sure how I feel about this. Mm-hmm. Let's say you still only get one vote for that lot. Mm-hmm. You know, and let's say the lot happens to be an acre in size. You know, I mean, there are lots of associations, especially as you get out into the rural areas of the state where, you know, we talk about like white, you know, those three rail horse fences, you know what I mean? Like there's plenty of room if somebody wants to put a granny unit in the back. And it's not really a burden, except that somebody might, now we're into this quasi-governmental thing where we've given each other the authority to dictate what we can do with our properties in a way that feels pretty onerous. It feels, it sort of gets my libertarian hackles up, which I'm not really libertarian at all, but it's a strange line that a lot of people haven't really given a whole lot of thought to. The knee-jerk reaction, I think, for sure, is to say, they can't do that. This is an HOA.
Yeah. But,
and I would agree when we're talking about, you know, I happen to live in an HOA and I've got a 10-foot back patio. You know, if the city says I can put a granny unit back there, is that really appropriate? Come on, we don't even have enough parking in the cul-de-sac, you know, that, but there's definitely a line. And I think it's a really interesting conversation, but one that if you go on, you know, Nextdoor, our favorite medium, it immediately draws political views, but I think is actually worth giving a little more thought to. But the more interesting thing I think is what you were saying, which is that really what we should be focusing on right now? I feel like there's some more important stuff that we could be focusing on. For instance,
but
I know that
that's being driven by politics, but go ahead with your
thought. Well, that's right. And that's why I say when I really gave it more thought, I realized that those of my friends who were on one side of this issue tended to be blue and those on the other side tended to be red. And it just didn't make a whole lot of sense. It's like when people say, for instance, with tenants, well, tenants are bad. Tenants are not bad. I have no problem with tenants. Lots of tenants treat their properties better than homeowners. This is a complicated issue. I don't know.
Yeah. It's going to take some time.
I don't love that it was dealt with such a broad brush. I feel like it's really put a lot of associations in a difficult situation where now most of them don't have ADU rules.
So, what about the new voting laws? Are you seeing that as being an issue?
Oh, gosh. You know, the biggest thing with the new voting laws that I've seen is you've really limited the board's ability to keep troublesome folks from jamming up the works on the board. And this is maybe not the newest legislation from last year or 2 years ago, but over the last few years, there's been a restriction placed on what types of rules the association can make about who can serve on the board. And remembering how serious we really do take this situation, because people are managing $50 million properties, $100 million, $200 million, many much larger associations where we're talking about $500 million worth of property, and you get these squabbles on the board where you don't have folks who are necessarily serious about helping a manager to operate a half, you know, $500 million property, and it turns into squabbles over people, pets, and parking. And we used to have the ability, I think, more to keep some amount of reasonable control over who is going to be managing your money. And you didn't have to really be looking. And wow, if you're a homeowner now, you better be keeping a close eye on what's going on with your board of directors.
I agree.
With your money.
So let's jump back for a minute to the underfunding. How can we better prepare the HOAs that are underfunded? Because a lot of people, between just the cost of living that went up, the construction that went up, the, you know, legislative impacts creating it, the insurances, these kinds of things, obviously it's not just one category that's created this big inflation. So what can they do to help them be better prepared?
I hate to say just be diligent, but there were many years when people would wear like a badge of honor this idea, well, we haven't raised our assessments here in 10 years. And all you're doing is a disservice to the people who own 10 years from now, right?
You're just deferring your maintenance.
You're just deferring your maintenance. I think actually one of the best things that you can really do is invest a little bit of money in your manager and your reserve study folks.
I also think they should keep their reserve study at every single board meeting and not let it go, you know, so far out there that then they're kind of flipping, going, where were we again with this? And I think they need to really be managing that budget and the reserves a lot tighter and look at it every meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I have associations who don't realize which trees are theirs, which lawns are theirs, which sidewalks are theirs. It's hard to believe that that could be true, but it's really true, especially where you have associations that are in a city where a sidewalk is maintained by the city, or they don't really think about it because if a tree root upends a little piece of the sidewalk, they think, well, that's not ours, that's the city's problem. Well, not really, you know, and so you're back to your manager needs to really know your property well.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard to do if they're changing rapidly. If you've gone through three managers in a year, you know, they're not going to be up to speed on everything. And it's important that they do understand your property, especially in high density urban areas like San Francisco, where there's a lot going on and it's an older construction area, you know, that they may have been built long ago. They definitely need to be up to speed.
Right. On the list of things that are a problem, right, it's the lack of institutional knowledge, meaning some of these associations are now 50 years old.
Right.
You know, you can bet, is IBM still a company? You can bet IBM still has its records from 50 years ago, but these associations don't. And so when something comes up, and somebody needs to know what the size of the rebar was on the work that got done in the back corner of the property, it might actually matter, and it might save them quite a bit of money to know the specs on whatever type of construction had happened previously. But I mean, that's impossible. There is absolutely zero way that those records are being kept at this point, because management companies come and go, board members come and go. They're nonprofit volunteer boards, and they're doing a great job. And to circle back, there's a lot going right. Look at, you know, a lot of these buildings, they look
great. They're in great shape. A lot of them are in really great shape.
even though sometimes boards quit en masse, you know, or just there's just turnover. People, you know, aren't interested. They sell. I mean, it's very difficult, but it would be really great to have a little more investment in institutional knowledge. And that can be through either keeping your manager, which, you know, listen, if they're, you know, I hope that they're that great, but if not, keeping really good institutional records. And that can be done partially by having your manager work through that with you as special projects over the, you know, over the year, and partially with a reserve analyst who can really give thought to some of the components that you might not really be thinking of, but would be super helpful to really understand what you own and what the maintenance obligations are.
I really, really like that question and answer. Last one for you. What advice do you have for managers right now? And I think it kind of falls right on what you just said. Really know your properties.
Really know your properties. And, you know, I think mentorship has fallen out of style. But find your team, your vendors, even especially. I learned so much about insurance from a couple of different folks. So many folks over the years who I've spoken with, an issue comes up. You want your folks to be CAI members if you can, CACM members if you can, keeping up with education. I understand that a lot of managers get asked to pay for their own educational opportunities. I think that's kind of a bummer. It would be great if management companies would all pay for this kind of education. And I know a lot of them do in-house stuff, but the CAI folks, they really keep up with what's going on in the state, and they are advocates for every homeowner and every manager and every management company. And they're doing the homework for us. And then they tell us what's going on and they keep us up to speed. CACM also, but also not just that, the managers in your office, you know, sit and have lunch with them if you can and listen to the stories and learn what you can. And as much as possible, if somebody's willing to be your mentor, say thank you and listen to what they've got to say, because there's so much to know and folks are actually more willing to help out than you might think they are.
We just did a podcast, I think 2-3 weeks ago, on mentorship versus leadership. And it was so impactful. What a great speaker he was. And he really gave such great perspective on not everybody can be a leader, but everybody can be a mentor. And just great podcast. If you get a chance to listen to that one, because I agree with you, we need to keep teaching and educating and mentoring those coming in, because it is a great industry and it's a thriving and growing industry. And we absolutely need to keep moving it along in a positive light and not just always focusing on problems that we're having. So with that, the name of the podcast is HOA, It's a True Story. Do you have a story you'd like to share with us?
Like so many others, I would say, I just did tell you a lot of stories, but one that sort of sticks out to me is just that it is still the people who drive the industry and sometimes the crazy people. And I have a lot of folks ask me why I like to put in my rules things about you shall not store personal items in the common area. A lot of places, you don't really think about what's the common area, but at a lot of these places that are 4-unit places, they actually, everything is common area right outside the front door. You know, we're all sharing that front lawn. And I had one particular fellow who had a junk yard in his back fenced in area. And I guess it was okay that he was, you know, keeping scrap metal and all sorts of like recycling and anything anybody in the neighborhood was getting rid of, he would store in his backyard and then he would go and want to sell it later. But it did cross the line when he would basically do his scrap work on the front yard in the common area. He'd rip apart a couch for the springs inside, and he'd take springs in his backyard. He'd have his orange work vest on and his boxers on. That's about it. And he'd be working it, and he'd take his stuff in the backyard, and then he was done. He would just leave the trash out front. He'd say, well, it wasn't my couch.
Oh my goodness.
And he, by the way, was an owner. So anyway.
Yeah, that's a good one. Nowadays, you'd have seen that on social media too, with him in his boxers and his orange safety vest.
Yes, although, and I
or next
I,
door.
Maybe that's the next podcast. But now, if you do something like that, you better watch out, because new legislation says that if you post that, that's probably retaliation against that owner. And you could have some sort of liability. And so to be continued on another podcast is the idea that the board can't do anything in response to anything anybody says. It can basically sit quietly and continue on with the real work at hand, which is the budgets and the maintaining of the properties. And you
but
know,
we can't manage people's behavior.
Gosh, if only.
If only, right? We would have a whole different Christmas shopping experience.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Erica, so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts on the HOA world right now. And if anybody would like to reach out to you, the best way to get you through your website at The Rock Law.
That's right, therocklawfirm.com.
Perfect. And if for whatever reason they don't find you there, they can reach out to us at inquiry@gbgroupinc.com and we will pass along your request to Erica. So thank you. And I hope we see you on the next one to talk more about the responsibilities of the board and what they can and can't do. That would be a good one.
Yeah, so thanks
stay
very much
tuned.
For having me.
All right.